what I do is I'm a life insurance agent first and foremost. I just started getting into the PNC stuff about a year now. I'm building a nice little PNC book of business. I wholeheartedly believe in insurance. And I think us as a culture, we need to do a better job of not only purchasing insurance, but purchasing the right types of insurance. And that's primarily what I wanted to discuss on this call because, I mean, we as black people, we will buy insurance. We will buy a ton of insurance, right? I know that when I speak to a client and she is an African-American female, I am good. I'm going to tell her, I'm going to tell all her kids, her spouse, her ex, and maybe even her parents. So that's just what we do. We believe in it. To black people, insurance appeals to two aspects, either a need, but more importantly, a greed. Now, the problem that we have, though, is this is a intangible object, right? We can't hold it. Yep. We don't even benefit from it as the purchaser. If I buy insurance on myself, if I buy life insurance on myself, it's probably going to be passed down to my grandkids. And this is how we have to think of it. It's not something that I'm going to access. But the problem is, the minute I have a hiccup in life, let's say my transmission goes, or I'm in between jobs, the first thing I'm going to let go is that life insurance. And at that point, this is where we fall into that problem because the insurance company now has collected premiums on me for, let's say, 5 years. I let this go, and now they no longer have to pay a death claim, but they've made money all these years off.
Right, absolutely.
These are the type of things I want us to get out of. I don't want us to buy these exorbitant life insurance policies. Let's just buy something that's manageable where you can still take your family out to eat, take your wife to a movie once a week, pre-COVID, obviously, and live life where, you know, something happens. This isn't the first thing you think about cutting because it's strangling you. I think it's definitely an education piece. I think, you know, once we stop desiring to look rich and actually desire to be rich, that changes a lot of our problems in our community, right? I mean, there's no reason why we should all aspire to having the latest car, the latest Jordans, and the most jewelry on in the club or throwing money in the club. I mean, that does nothing for us long term.
Right. No, I agree. I think so when I look at it, let me just kind of give a little bit of background here. So I have never been in the insurance space as a professional. At one point in time, I was a digital marketing director for the Real Estate Investors Association on the Gulf Coast. So we would work very closely with mortgage brokers as well as insurance brokers, right? Obviously, life insurance is adjacent to home insurance, car insurance, all these things. But one of the things that I would speak to frequently wasn't necessarily real estate or any asset class, but just financial literacy as a whole and how do you set those priorities. For many people, or how I view it, as self, right, who is, you know, born to a single mother, grew up in public housing, no longer the case, right, there were stages in my life to where my priorities had shifted, right? So if I am living day to day, then I'm not thinking about not only insurance, I may not be thinking about a Roth or IRA, right? I might not be thinking about buying stocks and bonds, right? Like, I may not be looking to think about my legacy because I'm in survival mode. I think that flip does switch when you think about, you know, the person who is having a hard time and they need to pay money for the transmission. I think that's a different use case than somebody who is popping bottles in the club, has the latest model car, or Gucci belts, right? So I think that that's a chasm that's, like, fairly wide. But I do think that insurance should be in somebody's almost investment strategy, right? So once you start thinking about not only life insurance, with the real estate guys, we would see people who are super duper excited about buying a waterfront property and then realizing that, like, flood insurance is a thing. But it, for some reason, is just not top of mind for a lot of people who are not directly affected, either professionally or personally. So, yeah, no, I think it's an educational thing. I think it's a cultural thing, right? Like, you know, we're black people. We are influenced by hip-hop. So when you hear rappers bragging about, you know, Gucci belts, you see a lot of purchases of Gucci belts. When you see rappers, I think about Nipsey Hussle, right? $1 million life insurance on my list. I think a lot about how I deal with my insurance. So, you know, I have life insurance, obviously. But I also think about, you know, at one point in time, I was super ambitious around those savings. I committed to whole life, a whole life policy, just so I could borrow against it in the future. Paid into it for about 2 years. Life changed. I relocated, changed jobs. That was the first thing, or one of the first things that I stopped paying on. And to your point, made a lot of payments. I didn't receive anything. They didn't have to pay anything to it. So I empathize with that, where it's like, okay, do I buy a car? Not maybe not a late model car, right? But do I buy a car? Do I pay insurance on that one? Do I buy, you know, a PlayStation for my kid who is a kid, right? Or do I say, hey, let me go ahead and defer my gratification and start paying for something that I'll receive the benefit in 30, 40, 50 years. Hopefully, right? Ideally, no one walks out and gets hit by a bus tomorrow, but that's always a case that, you know, we can't plan for that. So I think that's why insurance comes in. But, I mean, I think the conversation is really around financial literacy as a whole, insurance playing a part in that. You know, what are your priorities?
Yeah, totally. I totally, totally agree. And so for someone like you who paid into your whole life insurance for 2 years, you see, what I want people to do is I want people to call their agent, right? Because what we can do is we can say, you know what, let's do a 1035 exchange. Let's take whatever cash value that's in there or the surrender value that's in there. Let's get you some of that money back. But when you just stop paying, let's say you stop paying right now, it's January. Let's say you stop paying in January. Your policy probably is going to go, you know, if it's only 2 years, your policy is probably going to go through March, April, and then it's going to lapse. So they've used your cash value that you've built up to continue the payment for a couple of months, whereas you could have gotten your money back. We could have transferred your money into another vehicle, maybe a term life insurance, right? And term life is something that I think we need to understand as a community, because we love whole life. We know we can borrow against it, but there are other vehicles that we can borrow from, or other vehicles that we could use to save at a much greater rate than we can with these whole life. I mean, I sell whole life as much as the next man, but I think for a lot of us, we would be better off if we purchased a term, right?
So, right. No, I agree.
I'm 34 years old, and for $70 on a whole life, I could probably get, you know, $100,000 maybe on an IUL, maybe $120,000 face value, right? But for that same $70, I could probably get, you know, $400,000-$500,000 on a 30-year term. And what that does for my young family is that's a peace of mind that, God forbid, something happens. Here's a real cash injection. And it's 30 years, so it's going to last me until I'm 64.
Right. And I'll say that was the only thing that scared me about term life at the time, right? So when I purchased my first whole life policy, this is before I moved back to Mississippi. I was an engineer here in Atlanta, and I may have been 24, 25. So the idea of a term life policy that's 30 years means, you know, at 55, what happens there? Obviously, the premium goes up. You're selling insurance to a 20-year-old, super low rate, versus selling life insurance to someone in their 50s or 60s. And again, that was my biggest concern, right? So, as someone who also needs to be educated on this, right? I didn't know about a 1035 exchange, similar to before I got in real estate. I didn't know about a 1031 exchange. It seems like it's pretty similar, I'm assuming. But
yes,
as somebody who's young, if I am looking at insurance as my end game or my what plays out beyond my life, it got scary to me to think about paying into a policy for 30 years. And, you know, let's say I'm healthy. I've been an athlete, right? Let's say I make it past 55. Let's say I make it past 60. Then what happens to all the insurance that I pay in that term? Which, you know, it's the I don't want to say bet or the gamble that you make, but it's I mean, it's the risk of business, right? Like, there are no guarantees, which is why insurance exists in the first place.
You're absolutely right. And, I mean, you're real knowledgeable, Christian. I'm enjoying this conversation. There's one little caveat that a lot of people don't talk about, and it comes at a premium, but you can get a term with a 100% return of premium. So what that means is if you do not die in that 30 years, you can get all of your money that you paid in back.
See, I didn't know that. Damn. Nobody, obviously,
that's
insurance
crazy.
Is not telling me that, right? So that's why I think it's valuable to have these conversations, because somebody who's been in real estate, I remember when it wasn't the hottest topic in our culture. And I think it is possible for anything to do that, right? Like, now everyone's a real estate investor. It's become the forefront of mainstream conversation. And
absolutely.
So you see a lot more tactics, strategies being discussed publicly. I'm learning a lot on this conversation, and it doesn't seem as though insurance is taking the same forefront to the conversation that, real estate has, but or stocks. I see a lot of option traders coming out the blue now. So, you know, if these conversations are happening, I've just seen hip-hop be used as a vehicle to start these conversations. Because, again, I knew nothing about a 1035. I knew nothing about getting my premium back. That was literally the reason
I sold
the whole life policy.
So it's a return of premium policy. So, I mean, if I would have met you in your 20s, what I would have done is I would have done a stack policy, right? So if you would have said, you know what, Omari, I can afford $100 a month. I would have taken, in your 20s, I would have taken maybe $35, $40 of that and gotten you the most term we could for 30 years, right? And then the rest of that money I would have put in a whole life. It wouldn't have been a big whole life, right? It would have been maybe somewhere between 50 and 70,000. But what that would have done is that would have ensured that you have insurance past the 30 years, right? Also, it would have ensured that if something happens to you before the 30 years is up, your family has the most amount of coverage possible.
Right, right. No, that's super fair. I think about, and again, like, there's so much insurance that it just depends on the risk profile of someone, right? Because, again, the same day I purchased Whole Life, my phone rang to Aflac, who was trying to get me to buy workers' comp, right? And then the story that's painted, and I'd actually like to hear your perspective on how you viewed insurance before you became an insurance professional, right? But the story that's painted is one of doom and gloom and not necessarily one of practicality. And I think that's one that can cause a lot of skepticism for somebody, right? Like, if somebody's painting the worst case scenario, and if somebody who is receiving this, or let me start over. If an insurance salesman is painting the worst case scenario and the person who is potentially buying this insurance doesn't identify with that worst case scenario, I think the conversation goes differently than if an insurance professional paints just the story of practicality, right? And then, you know, it's logical to say, okay, well, I can do that. That makes sense. Versus trying to hunker down for the worst case, because God forbid, you know, workers' comp insurance, flood insurance, volcano insurance, earthquake insurance, right? Like, all these things can have somebody a little jaded towards that space. And again, I think that's a conversation that can be had around education and around, you know, what are the odds here, right? Because as somebody who's in technology, one of the things that's interesting to me is, and I'd like to hear your perspective on this too, is what's happening with this insurance technology piece.
Like cybersecurity insurance?
Not cybersecurity insurance. So there are a lot of insurance companies that are popping up now that are using just like data modeling to do different models, right? So let's say, so Geico, Progressive, are any of these larger insurance companies, you have such a broad user base. Imagine if somebody's saying, hey, if you can run a mile right today, if you can do 50 push-ups today, if you can do, you know, if you have a body weight of XYZ today, can we use different data points to give you a policy where we're essentially self-selecting the lowest risk people, and we can give you a 50% discount on your policy, but we take, you know, 90% of the risk is now taken off the table because we're not a main or a mass market product.
No. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't think of the name of the company that advertises all over Instagram and Facebook, but they say, you know, if you can do 50 push-ups, you can get $1 million policy for $13.52 a month.
Right.
So, I mean, as an agent, I hate those things, right? Because what it does is it allows people. So first of all, we're all around the same age. We're all men, right? And so in the back of our minds, we think, you know what? I can do 50 push-ups right now. And I'm gonna tell you, I cannot, right? I work out 3 days a week. I mean, I just lost 70 pounds during this pandemic, but I will struggle doing those 50 push-ups. And right. So what this does is this gives people false hope. So now when they talk to an insurance agent like myself after they're denied, they're like, well, I'm expecting $1 million worth of insurance for $13. Why can't you deliver that? And that's just not real because these companies are only picking the top 2% of
Isn't that the insurance model, right? Because the analogy I've always heard before the push-ups was, if I'm a safe driver, and I'll just use car insurance as an example. If I'm a safe driver, I always use my turn signal. I always wear my seatbelt. I never go above the speed limit. My insurance policy is going to be raised because I'm here in Atlanta, where that's not the case with everyone. So you're essentially taking somebody who may never need a cash-out policy, and you're hedging against the person who, you know, swerves lane to lane, right? Like, we're all in that same bucket if we have the same insurance company. So as somebody who may or not be able to do 50 push-ups right now, and you admitted to the same, right, if for us to have the same insurance policy as, you know, I don't know how healthy it is, but someone who's a vegan and runs 3 miles a day and doesn't drink soda, right, I can see someone in the top 2%, being upset that they're used as basically a cost basis for the average American. So, again, and I'm just saying that to say that I think the reason why I think that's so successful is it answers a lot of the skepticism that somebody who is not educated in the space may have.
Yeah.
Especially if I just play football, right? Like, if I'm an Atlanta Falcon and I'm just like, I do 50 push-ups.
Right.
No, I was. I think you answered the question around how do you have a conversation if somebody is saying, "I'm healthy as a horse. I'll get life insurance in 10 years from now." You know, Lord forbid anything happens tomorrow, right? But the reason that I stopped paying for my whole life policy, I was an engineer. I had a family emergency, so I moved back to Mississippi, where I was not making as much as I was as an engineer in Atlanta. First thing that goes is, well, the whole life policy felt like more of a luxury as a 25-year-old than, you know, something that I could see immediate benefit from, right? Like, let's say I just put $100 a month into Tesla or some a mutual fund, right, or any other investment vehicle, because it seems as though when we talk about life insurance, and as somebody who's received, my grandfather just passed and my mother-in-law just passed, and they both had life insurance in place. So our families have been, were able to take care of essentially the estates. Like, we can keep the family moving forward. But as somebody who's 20, right, like, I remember being 19, you know, thinking I'm Superman. Like, bro, I'll never. But if we're using whole life, or not whole life, but if we're just using life insurance as a investment vehicle, I almost think that it makes sense for somebody to include life insurance in an investment strategy rather than saying, hey, let's just make this the entire priority. Because, again, it feels like if you're saying, hey, just take $100 a month, $200 a month, let's get you a term policy, let's put you $50 a month into a mutual fund, right, let's build up an emergency fund in case something does happen, it almost feels like you could get more opt-in from somebody looking to buy insurance. Because they're not looking to buy insurance. They're looking to protect their future.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Something else I really like to do is I like to talk about the other types of insurances, right? So I think we as black people, or especially young black people, we are only thinking about life insurance. But what about long-term care insurance? So what happens when your grandmother can no longer live on her own and needs somewhere to go? And typically, our culture, we don't believe in putting people in a nursing home because we feel like we're just, you know, putting them there to die and their care may not be the best. So something I've been doing with a lot of young professionals, especially young lawyers, is I've been talking to them about long-term care insurance and making sure they have a pool of money that they can access when it's time. And the thing about it is Nationwide has a really good product where they allow you to set a beneficiary. So some of these companies now, what they do is they say, well, if you don't use this pool of money, we will then keep it because you didn't need the insurance. But Nationwide allows you to set a beneficiary. So if you don't use the pool of money for long-term care, you can then leave it like any other life insurance product. And, I mean, I just spoke to a lady who's 43 years young, and she was going to put $200 a month. You know, she's a lawyer making about $350 a year. She's going to put about $200 a month, and she was going to have access to close to half a mil from day one. At 70, she would have access to over $800,000. So if something happened to her, there's this pool of money to she can use to take care of herself. She also doesn't have children or a spouse yet. So, you know, these are things that we need to think about, because if something happens to, like, you or I, are you prepared to be a burden to your child? Are you prepared to have, you know, your child feed you and, you know, wipe your butt, for lack of a better term?
Right. No, for sure.
Yeah. So these are things that I just want us as a community, as a culture, to talk about.
No, for sure. I mean, if I can be as frank as possible, right, I think the conversation for somebody who is stopping a $50 a month payment because they need a transmission is a completely different world than somebody who's pulling in $250,000 a year, no kids, no spouse. I almost asked who it was, right? Like, but I think those conversations seem like, as black people are lumped in, right? So you're talking to black people, right? You're talking to, you know, my mother, who was a single mom, who was a teacher in public housing, the same way that you talk to a 25-year-old doing $300,000 a year as a lawyer. And I think that those conversations feel like two different worlds.
I'm gonna tell you how we can use life insurance for that person who's stopping the payment on because of transmission. So the first policy I ever sold when I started selling life insurance in 2014 was to a set of three Jewish brothers, right? So what they did was they all got together and said, you know what, we're going to put life insurance on our grandmother, right, who was elderly, and it was rather expensive, but they put life insurance on their grandmother, and then she died several years later, and they got paid. You hear me?
Right.
No. So what I would suggest to that person who, how we appeal to that person who's struggling or who has to use, you know, has to stop a $50 a month payment because of the transmission, they're not always going to be struggling, and or the transmission's not always going to go. So if they can take that $50 and say, you know what, let's put life insurance on grandma, or let's put life insurance on Ethel, right? That may be the real move if they could pool their resources together and then get a big payday.
I'm not even going to lie to you. I think it's more social, right? Like, I think financially that makes so much sense. But, like, the idea of me having that conversation with my grandmother is overwhelming, right? Like, being like, hey, yo, granny, I love you. I'm about to take out a policy on you. Don't rush to die. But, you know.
But what I think that's why die?
Right. No, that's fair. I mean, I think, again, financially it's so astute. But I think it's just an uncomfortable conversation to have. And I think different families deal with that differently, right? Like, you have, when I see a lot of, like, wealthy white families will discuss estate planning, right, early, right, like in the 40s, right, will discuss estate planning and wills, right, versus my granny in the church, you know what I'm saying? Like, just to be like, yo, I'm going to take out policy because you're going to go, well, then it just feels like the conversation goes a lot differently. Because, again, and I'm not even sure how relevant this is, but, like, as I navigate corporate America and even starting to think about, what is it, the key a key man policy?
Key man,
is that what it's called?
Key man policy, yes.
Right, and starting to understand how that's working, it's becoming interesting to me because, like, you know, a corporation doesn't necessarily have to have feelings, right? Like, you kind of expect that. So if they are looking to insure you as a senior executive, you just kind of like, well, man, it is what it is. But, you know, if your grandson is just like, yo, hey, don't worry about it. I just took out a posse on you. It's $300 a month. I'll take care of it. Just keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing. It can be a little weird.
So let me ask you this, right? So you have a child?
I do not.
Oh, okay. Because I heard you mention a child earlier, but that probably was the PlayStation example. But how do we change that for the next generation? Because I think until we start to have more conversations about money at the dinner table,
right?
It's hard to really change anything. There's so much distrust where, you know, people are afraid that, oh, if they take life insurance out on me, they're going to kill me. No. Like, you're worth more to me living than this $100,000. I love you more
absolutely
than that. But we know at some point, We're not meant to live here forever, right? So at some point,
right,
the good Lord's going to call us home. And listen, that $100,000 will come in handy to make sure you have a good burial.
I just feel so weird. Because, I mean, logically, I should actually try to take out a posse on my grandmother, right? But I also need to call her more. Yeah, like, I just need to. It's one of those things to where, in my opinion, I just think that poverty can cause you to distrust anybody with money, right? Like, what's the J. Cole line? Who you had to rob, who you had to kill, right?
Yes.
So to even have that conversation, if you are insecure about your finances, why would you talk about them at the dinner table, right? So I think that getting comfortable, uncomfortable conversations around finances, that's a completely different conversation. I definitely think you need to have. But in my opinion, the reason why so many people spend money on, I drive a Kia, by the way. So I'm a six-figure earner who's driving a Kia, and that was, I had to fight the inner, whatever word you want to use there, right? I almost copped a Benz, and I was like, nah, let me,
right,
you know, da-da-da-da-da. But it's because you don't want to look like you don't have money. And then what's that Jay-Z line? Like, the richer I got, the smaller my chains got?
Right.
So, you know, I think that that's a lot of healing. And I think these conversations need to be had, but I think it's a deeply rooted thing with our people because we are, you know, we make poverty look good.
So our spending power is somewhere close to what, $2.3 trillion they say it is per year? I mean, there are companies, there are corporations that spend millions, if not billions of dollars to advertise to us to make sure that, you know what, when you get your little stimulus money, you're going to want to go buy the Jordans, right? Rather than,
right,
you know what,
right,
the emergency fund isn't there. Let me put this away. God forbid in July I don't have whatever.
Right. No, I mean, you know, it's I don't know why these quotes are coming to me like this, but it's another quote that comes to mind where somebody told me early on that low self-esteem is the most expensive thing you can ever have, right?
Woo.
So, I mean, you know, but I get it. I get it because, again, like, growing up as a kid, like, I didn't want to look poor. Like, you know, I'm in public housing, but I got to have these shoes or I'm just not going to go to school. Right? And it was that simple. Like, it, right? Because it's like, versus if I'm rich and somebody making fun of my shoes because they, but I'm like, bro, I can shrug it off a lot easier versus literally being devastated at the fact that I'm being made fun of because I'm poor. Right? So, you know, I think that's an uncomfortable thing to sit with. But Calvin and I talked about this, right? It's not the norm. The path I went down is not the norm, but it's possible. But I don't know how to normalize that.
That's real.
What y'all I mean, saying earlier about I'm sorry, go ahead.
So people don't want to share what they've inherited because they feel like people may want to come and hit them up for a loan or something. And, you know, education has been told to us that, listen, this is the only way to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. I mean, look at Christian's example, right? He was a child of a single mother. They lived in public housing. Now he's an engineer, right? He's a six-figure earner. Without education, it's hard for most people to achieve that. So education has been, you know, although the price is exorbitant at this point, but, I mean, education is one of the only ways that could happen without somebody having to die.
Right, right. Full disclosure, I dropped out of school to start a company. A little cliche, but, you know.
I love it.
But even, right, but even to your point around, even to your point around, not only are you ashamed because you don't want to tell people what you got, but, like, my logical brain versus my emotional brain are having a war as I sit on this conversation with you both and thinking about taking out a life insurance policy on my grandmother, because then it feels like it's blood money, right? Like, obviously it's not, but logically it makes all the sense in the world. But, like, you know, I don't know. It feels, as somebody who is the recipient of my mother-in-law's life insurance policy, it does also feel very weird. But she took out that policy on herself just to make sure that her kids were okay. She took out, you know, a lot of these, she took advantage of a lot of those life insurance policies on herself versus her daughter taking out that policy on her. So I don't think that it came with that same almost guilt, right? To say,
right,
like, well, I'm a, you know, but that's kind of my initial feeling to it is, you know, I'm more than happy. I have life insurance on myself now. My wife has life insurance. We got insurance on our dog, right? So it's that kind of a situation. But I also don't have life insurance on my grandmother. I don't have life insurance on my mother. But it almost feels like, you know, and maybe this is the year that I need to get better with having uncomfortable conversations. But, yeah, now it just feels, for lack of a better term, icky.
Yo, Omari, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
As far as that stigma that comes with insurance and getting over it, is that, well, actually, go ahead. I want to word this better, so go ahead with your point. Go ahead.
Go ahead with whose point, Christian?
No, I thought you were about to say something in response.
Yeah, so I agree, Christian. I do think we need, like, it's not only you, right? We need to start having these conversations, these uncomfortable conversations. And also, once we have the conversations, we need to have the follow-up conversations, because I found in the last 6 months that so many of my friends' parents think they have adequate insurance, right? So one of my friends in Maryland, her parents had this policy they've been paying for, I don't know, 20 years now. And this policy, they've only paid it once per quarter. It's like $300 each quarter. Once you tell me that, I automatically knew that what they had was an AD&D policy, accidental death and dismemberment. So what that means is you're paying for this life insurance that you're thinking is going to pay you if you die, but it's only going to pay out if you die in an accident or you lose a limb or things of that nature. So,
right.
I mean, we need to have these uncomfortable conversations to see what our parents have, what our parents don't have. And then if they tell us they have something, we need to sit down with a professional or even by ourselves and just review what the policy says. I mean, we have Google. It's not hard in 2021. We can figure out what makes sense and what doesn't.
Okay, so my question, Omari, is, is there, because there's all these moral stigmas that come with it, like, are there organizations, grants, programs that just are aimed at helping people have, you know, long-term life insurance plans? And I ask because I feel like that could create a situation where when people die, everyone's death starts to become fishy. But is that even...
What would it take? And I'm keeping it honest. I actually feel guilty for asking these questions. How much would it cost to take out a life insurance policy on someone's grandmother?
Yeah, so it depends. There's a couple of factors that go into determining the price of life insurance, especially when you're talking about grandparents. We're going to talk about their age, and we're going to talk about their medical history.
Right, right, right. I was going to say, so my grandmother is 70. She does not had any medical interaction with the doctor, so she's in good health, but she is a smoker, and I know that's a big deal.
She is a smoker. Okay, so her being a smoker is going to drive the rate up tremendously, especially being 70, right? Because I'm not saying anything bad about your grandmother, but odds are, from the insurance standpoint, they're going to say it's just a matter of time before something is found.
Right.
And so, I mean, we could put together, you know, a $50,000 policy, and that still may be $200 plus a month.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't put something together, though.
No, absolutely. I mean, even in 10 years, right? Like, Lord forbid it happens shortly. But even in 10 years, what, $200 a month, looking at $2,400 a year, 10 years, $24,000 for a $50,000 payout. You know, financially, the math is mathing, but it just feels dirty.
Right, I mean, right. I think once we realize, once we get over that initial shock of feeling dirty, we'll be fine.
Right. Now, I think this goes back to the first point that we had is, how do we make this a conversation? And to me, this feels like it's a larger conversation than just insurance. This feels like you're talking, it's a culture shifting conversation. It's a financial conversation. And then insurance should definitely be conveniently positioned to be purchased. But I think these conversations, you know, when I was selling real estate, I was talking to somebody who's buying investment properties. I would talk about a house different than somebody who's buying their first home, right? And I would talk about that different than somebody who is just, you know, their kids are gone, kids going to college, this is your fourth home. Like, those are, even if it's the same exact house, those conversations are completely different.
Yeah, and I can see why, right? I mean, some people are going to have a sentimental value where, you know, you're thinking about your grandmother and you're thinking about the sentimental value. That's similar to me buying my first home versus, you know, a soulless corporation, to use your term. Them thinking about a keyman policy is like an investor thinking about buying his 10th property, right?
Right, right.
What can my ROI be?
Right. And, you know, I'm not here to bash the corporations, right? Like, I definitely, you know,
No.
But, no, I mean, to your point, now, what I've seen in a lot of these, especially, you know, I'm no longer an engineer. I'm now a consultant to these larger companies, is that there is no accountability a lot of times, right? So HR passes something on, and this goes over to this person, who goes over to this person, who goes over to this person. And the same way that you're saying that when you're being hired as a employee, you may not look at all the paperwork, HR may or may not do the same thing, or they might have a law firm draw something up saying what they need, and then this HR manager might get a different job at another company, so somebody else inherits all the legacy paperwork, right? They're not going back to study the history of a 200-year-old company. They're just thinking about, you know, what is in my realm of responsibility. So, you know, that's the only reason I would describe something as soulless, is because everybody who has a soul, unfortunately, is replaceable. A lot of these companies are older than the founders. But again, that's why I think that the conversation around life insurance feels like a conversation around just financial literacy and just finances in general.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree.
No, I appreciate this conversation. I'm definitely going to call my grandmother after this and tell her I love her. but, yeah, no, I think everything you're saying is spot on. And I think that's as a consultant, that's one of the biggest issues I see, is there's just a disconnect in understanding, right? So, like, when you see somebody who understands a market in and out, they're going to operate a lot different than somebody who wants to start something from the beginning and just does not understand how all the moving pieces fit together. So
yeah,
if we're talking about – go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's the value of speaking to an insurance professional, even if you don't talk to me, right? Like, you guys can find somebody who does this on day in, day out. They can show you how to use your life insurance to leverage other deals. I mean, I've known people who've been able to, we keep talking about real estate, but they've been able to use their whole life and leverage that towards down payments or more favorable terms with banks in acquiring rental properties. Because a bank wants to know that, God forbid something happens to you, can I still get paid on this money that I lent you?
Right.
And now if the bank knows, well, this person's responsible, they have a sizable amount of life insurance, and if they could add me as a beneficiary for the next 30 years or until the term of this mortgage or loan is paid off, yeah, this makes this person a better credit risk, and that's all just because using the life insurance you already have.
Right. No, I mean, like you said, I think a lot of these strategies, I mean, we could talk about fundamentally changing our culture, right, like if this was something that was put in place. So, again, I think, you know, I've been a proponent of economic development for years now. One of the reasons I took the role is real estate. Prior to that, I didn't have a lot of real estate experience, just digital marketing experience. So one of the things that excited me about that was, okay, how can you accelerate not only home ownership for people who are living there, but how can you accelerate the conversation for people who are trying to, you know, be a first-generation six-figure earner, seven-figure earner, right? Like, how can you start that conversation for people who may not feel that it's possible anymore in America, right, specifically? But I think that conversation is a conversation that needs to be had. But, again, like, in my experience, yeah, when you are down, you don't like anybody who's up, especially if you don't feel that you can get up.
I think the conversation just needs to be had and reminding people that they can get up, right? I mean,
right.
There have been countless of people ahead of you who have done it, and we don't have to keep hiding the ball. I feel like this baby boomer generation, they love to tell you what you should be doing, but they seldomly show you how to do it. And I think our generation, even through, you know, even though sometimes it's a cost and they have a course for sale, but I think what they do is, you know what they say, I'm going to show you how to do it. I'm going to show you how to get the LLC, and I'm going to show you how to get the $5,000 SBA loan so now you have business credit, so you can go after the big credit. Like, they want to show you how to do it.
No, I agree. And then, like you said, even if it's not the course, like, because everybody does have a course now. That's funny. But
everybody
even if it's not through that. Even if it's not through that, like, Google is free, and if, you know, for the foreseeable future will be. So if you are looking, or if you are willing to kind of sort through all the articles and da-da, the information is there. But, again, my belief is that you have to believe it's possible before you even try to take a step in that direction. So if you feel like it's hopeless anyway, if you're hopeless anyway, if you don't feel there's any point in even trying, then, you know, it seems that everything else is a non-starter.
You're absolutely right. That's why representation matters, right? People got to see it before they can do it.
Right. No, absolutely.
What's not
wrong with that? I'll go ahead.
I was just saying I had to jump on the other line. I didn't want to interrupt. If y'all had a conversation going on, go ahead.
I don't think I had any points or any other questions. Like, this has been extremely helpful for me. I was going to ask, Amari, did you have anything else that you wanted to speak to or that you wanted to bring up?
No, not at this time, but I would love if as Calvin and I strategize the rest of the social media points or strategies, I guess, if you would be available just for more conversations, because you're really knowledgeable as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I'd love to be a part of this. Calvin knows, right? Like, anything that's trying to move the culture forward, it gets me excited. Especially when you start talking about money. You get my eyebrows peeking up, you know.
Right. Calvin, do you think we have enough? I know you